It's 10:35 Newfoundland Standard Time. Stay tuned for The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine, with Paul Moth. You are listening to the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, 520 on the long wave. This week on The Great Eastern.
The people grow so soft-hearted. Equity this and equity that. Everybody can't be a winner.
A sailor suit? Really, Frank? Do you have to torture me so?
No more of an Orwellian nightmare today, Paul.
Oh, good.
Baywops out. Baywops out.
Who are you?
What are you doing in my head?
Good morning, Newfoundland and peoples of Canada. Welcome once again to The Great Eastern. I'm your host, Paul Moth. Today's show is bursting at the seams. Bloody media mayhem in the BCN archives, historical curses, cyber welfare, Nancy Drew's disappointment, luminous eels, and so much more. All for you on The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine. What a summer we're having in Newfoundland. It's the best since the 30s, they say. I was at a barbecue the other night, and people were so happy, so overcome with the joy of a silky summer in St. John's, that they were kissing one another on the cheek in an affected French kind of way. You wouldn't know, but you were on the Riviera. It's garden party season, and brawny, tawny crews are training for the St. John's Regatta on Kittyvitty Lake. The perfume of clover and lupins fills the air. Now, I've been taking advantage of the good weather, and I've been walking into work. This is a favored morning spot in downtown St. John's. It's Giovanni Neri's Café Cartagena. No more Nescafe and Coffee Mate for the denizens of this happening little burg. It's all lattes and espressos these days. I come by here on my way to work, and I pick up breakfast. Ah, Giovanni!
Ah, you?
Yep. What's in the Hungry Man cappuccino anyway?
It's a regular cappuccino that we stick in the blender with two fried eggs and some bacon.
Now, this is real bacon, or is it bacon bits?
Hey, always real bacon.
Now, those big bowls that people are drinking out of over there, what's in them?
Well, that's a cafe au lait extra. It's a liter of coffee and a liter of milk.
We've got a great crowd in here this morning. Is that Philip Dean? God, I thought he was in hospital.
Mr. Dean is having a double press, 300,000 PSI double quattro.
I bet that gives you a lift.
The coffee that got me off the cocaine, Paul.
Well, let's have a little taste here. Oh, God, that sure hits the spot. There are a lot of interesting coffees here.
For lunch, there's a Café Niçoise with tuna, anchovy, tomato, olives, eggs, and cucumber, or Café Tartare.
And there's tea-flavored coffee for Mom. And to think how behind the times St. John's used to be. How much do I owe you, Giovanni?
Keep on walking, Paul. I'm out.
What a guy. Another favorite spot of mine in downtown St. John's is Noseworthy's News. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Paul. Copy of Canada's national newspaper?
Ontario Hydro sold to New York State. Who cares? Pickering meltdown imminent. Cares? Art Gallery of Ontario boiled ready to burst. Cares? Jason Alomar carded Astros for Williams. Cares? Editorial page. Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Parkism, final solution for the rock.
The latest issue of Spike is in, Paul.
Oh, just slip it inside the report on business. What's all the kerfuffle here, Martin?
It's that English guy in the bottle.
The harbor used to be a hubbub of activity with every manner of ship and boat coming and going. Now all we have is the scattered loony from Britain trying to cross the Atlantic in a bathtub or on a surfboard. So, hey, what's up?
I believe Buddy's going to put himself in that bot with Bob back to England. He's raising money for vegetable rights, I believe.
Vegetable rights, eh? What does it all mean?
Look, he's stuck.
What are you going to do now, you stun moron?
God, look at that. Oh, they just got to clean up this harbor.
Oh. I wonder if someone's going to try to cross the Atlantic on that, eh?
Ah, can't bear to watch. Well, my final stop before I head into work is at Dick's, a family barbershop that's been operated in the shadow of Signal Hill for as long as I can remember.
Morning, Paul.
How are you, Dick?
Comb over, ear clip,
You know how to do it right, Dick.
I heard the show Saturday, Paul.
Oh, yeah. Well, how about those Parkists, eh?
Well, you know, as hard as I find listening to that Flint woman, I've got to agree with her about the Parkists. Mm-hmm. The paving in the parks is just excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So, we be covering the regatta this year?
Oh, indeed we are, you know, tradition.
So, who do you like in the media race?
Well, I'll be putting my money on the boys from the BCN.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll take as much of that action as you could offer. Oh, my. I don't like the look of this mold back here, Paul. I think it's after moving. Oh, it's after going off. Do you want me to nip that out there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, just there, and a little antiseptic here. There it is. Look, just look.
God, it's an ugly little thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Ah. You know, my father, he had a mole just like that, except it turned all hard and had a kind of a horn on the end of it.
You know, I remember your father with that thing.
Yeah.
Frightened us when we were kids.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Dick.
No bop then?
No, not with the rain, you know.
One night in December, I'll never forget, a charming young maiden I happened to meet. Her eyes shone like diamonds, she was dressed to kill, and I met her, I was riding on Signal Hill. Will you come, a lot of me boys, come, a lot of me boys, down Signal Hill. I said, now, my fair one, if you will excuse, to partake of me, I'm sure she didn't refuse. But then I must say that my first met love thrill, when I met her, I was sliding on Signal Hill. Will you come along with me, boys? Come along with me, boys, on Signal Hill. Well, the very next day to the church we did go, which made all the people to the rag, you must know. Just she, will you marry? Says I, hate I will. And if buckle, we were up on Signal Hill. Will you come along with me, boys? Come along with me, boys, on Signal Hill. And now we are married and children have three. Sure, myself and the missus could never agree. We one christened William, the other one Bill. The castle's like the other one Signal Hill. Can you come along with me, boys? Come along with me, boys. Come along with me, boys. Down Signal Hill.
I'm headed back to the BCN archives here with Director of Radio, Ish Lundgren. And Ish has got something special from the regatta this week, don't you, Ish?
Another little slice of history, Paul, to help celebrate this great St. John's event. The last media race ever won by the BCN team. I've got the race. It's called by Carl Pilgrim, one of the greatest radio voices of the 20th century.
Well, when was this recorded?
The first Wednesday in August, 1951.
Wow, 43 years since the BCN won. Did we stop entering a team or what, Ish?
No, we've had one in every year, Paul, and every year is a disappointment. I think it's fair to say that since our last glorious victory on the pond, the other media outlets have had it in for us. There have been some strange coincidences and accidents over the years, you know. But anyway, I don't want to talk about the past 43 years of disappointment today, Paul.
Good.
I want to talk about that great, glorious moment in 1951 when we won it all. Here's Carl now at the start of the race.
In the blue, Peter, it's the Evening Telegraph. In the colonists, newcomers, the CBC Dominion Network. In the native, it's the Daily News. And in the Miss BCN, it's our own squad from the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland. And they're off. It's a...
The Miss BCN?
Yes, there was a Doyle boat and a Barrings boat. Different commercial sponsors for each score.
That's exciting.
Oh, it was. For some time, we were a force to be reckoned with on the pond.
And they are neck and neck now at the board. With the CBC Dominion and Evening Telegraph taking the turn. There's quite a chop on the pond today. And, oh, my, the CBC and Telegraph shells have collided and overturned. I can't see the cox of the CBC. Oh, there he is now. Thank God. And, oh, the Daily News crew and the native runs right over him. Even from across the pond, I can hear the desperate screams for help. But it has put the BCN crew in the lead, undaunted by the thrashing crews from the CBC and the Telegraph. Our youths are rowing on. They have cleared the boys. It's looking good for our boys now. Row, lads, row! One of the CBC crew tries to grab onto the Miss BCN, but our stroke gives him a swift door over the head. We're away and free. The committee launch is approaching now, and oh my God, they can't touch their engines. They're plowing into the bodies, thrashing on the surface of scenic Kitty-Vitty Lake. They've cut the native in two, and now the Daily News crew is in the water. Oh, the humanity! It's a chilling sight, and on come the BCN! Row on, Stouthearts, the pride of the BCN! Evan Kavanaugh! Stroke, boys, stroke! Peter Malone and his twin brother Paul, rowing numbers 1 and 2. Heave away, boys! Israel Fashion, Ben McMaster, 3 and 4. Mothers, be proud of your BCN crew! And number 5 is Ish Lundgren, cocked by Jolly Roger Rigsby's. And now, another rescue vessel plunges through the bodies and flames and spills petrol and detritus on the surface near the boys. You can hear the scream. Oh, the humanity! But the BCN crew has crossed the finish line. Winners of the meteor race in an unofficial time of 11:12. BCN, the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland.
Stay tuned now for further word of the tragic loss of life at the bottom of the pond. But when we come back, we'll talk to the winners. BCN, I'm Carl Pilgrim.
God, those Malone boys could row. Arms like legs, Dad.
Ish, I'm appalled.
What?
Say, you won. You were in the crew. The cost of the lives of those poor boys, those men rowing for the CBC.
Oh,
and the...
not that stuff again. More of that CBC whining. Our boys had trained for a single end. From the day the ice went off the pond in early July. Win that race at all costs. Nobody from the CBC would have helped our crew had we capsized.
Yeah, but come on now.
The races were so important in those days, Paul. People have grown so soft-hearted. Equity this and equity that. Everybody can't be a winner.
I see, but is there bad blood now between BCN and the others?
Well, Paul, you know, the Daily News is no longer in business, and many people lay that to the fact that their brilliant young editor, Dewey Murphy, was drowned in the carnage at the boys, as it came to be called. And the CBC lost Carl Simpson and Pierre Gendreau, two promising talents. 7 people in all were lost, including Sir Peyton Osborne in the committee vote. Tragic. But that's life. I don't know why they still hold a grudge. Sore losers, I guess.
Well, they might have a point.
Nonsense. No regrets, Paul.
And the BCN hasn't won the race since.
No, we've had a few good runs, but that 51 crew is the kind that only comes around once in a lifetime. The Malones were killed in a house fire soon after, and that was it.
Well, Ish, thanks for introducing us to another historic broadcast, and I'm sure that you join me in wishing good luck to the BCN team in this year's media race. And we'll see you again next week.
In the vault.
5:20 on the long way. You are listening to the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, BCN.
It's time once again for WordWorks, a review of current literary goings-on in Newfoundland. And we have with us, as usual in the studio, Kathleen Hanrahan, popular author and critic. How are you, girl?
Excellent, Paul.
Busy week in letters?
A lot going on, most of it good, I'm happy to say.
Great. Let's get right to it then.
Well, the literary news of the week, maybe even the year, we'll have to wait and see about that, was the release of the long-awaited new novel by Newfoundland's literary bad boy, Delbert Onglow.
I loved his last novel, False Meat.
Uh-huh.
It was demanding, but really urgent and probing, I thought. What's the new one all about?
Well, it's very intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a rewriting and bringing up to date of the old Hardy Boys series.
Mm.
The Hardy Men, if you will.
Oh, the Hardy Men. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's great. I grew up on that mystery series, you know, and I often wondered how Frank and Joe turned out.
Well, I was more of a Nancy Drew reader. Mm. Oh, and listeners will be happy to know that Nancy does make an appearance in this book.
Well, tell me more.
Well, it's called The Bayport Closet Case, and it's created quite a stir, let me tell you.
Well, so are Joe and Frank still in the sleuthing game?
Well, hold on now there to your memories, Paul. I've picked out a couple of passages.
I love it when you read.
Frank held up several Polaroids of the murder victim. It seems Dr. Hertzler had one of those alternative lifestyles. Joe came over and examined the pictures. You ever been to this club, Frank? It's hard to tell. They all look alike, exclaimed Frank, lighting his pipe. Stop the charade, Frank. I'm your brother. You can tell me these things. Joe put the pictures back on the desk. Perhaps I'll visit the club. In disguise, suggested Frank. Joe eyed Frank with dismay. Frank, I've talked to Nancy. She's told me. Frank seemed not to have heard. I think my sailor suit will be perfect for a seedy haunt like that. I'll catch you back at Bayport, Joe, said Frank over his shoulder, and tell you what I find out about this one-armed man. Joe slumped on the Chesterfield, weeping. Oh, we both have our problems, Frank. It's time we faced them. But Frank was gone, and Joe's gaze slowly came to rest on the remains of the white powder only 2 feet away.
Well, that is an unusual twist. But, I mean, these guys faced worse than that 100 times when they were kids.
It gets better, Paul.
Okay.
Frank entered the Bayport mansion to find Nancy, empty martini glass in hand, speaking with Biff, the groundskeeper. "Will that be all, Miss Drew?" asked Biff. "It'll have to do," answered Nancy, as the burly Biff left through the open French doors that led into the garden. Nancy fixed herself another drink. "A sailor suit? Really, Frank, do you have to torture me so?" "I'm on a case, Nancy. Has Joe called?" "No, but his attorney did. Joe's wrapped your roadster around the oak tree on the shore road." "Is he okay?" Frank was clearly worried about his brother. "Nothing a stomach pumping won't clear up." "What are you getting at, Nancy?" "Joe has a serious drug problem, Frank." "Well, he has some problems with lucidity and consciousness since the mystery of the missing Cessna, and he keeps scratching at imaginary spiders, but do you think it's drugs?" But Nancy had already fallen asleep on the floor.
Well, what would Fenton have to say about all this, I wonder?
Those are only the passages that I could read on the radio.
Well, there's a lot of boyhood illusions exploding there. I mean, I understand Anglo's objective, but I can't help feeling outraged in a way.
Well, you're not the only one. Provocation is Anglo's signature. Mm. His talent really feeds on controversy, as you know, and he's got plenty on his hands over this one.
Yeah, I know. I spoke with him after the last release, and he said he'd stopped caring about the audience years ago and finally stopped caring about himself.
Sort of a step beyond self-indulgence.
Yeah, I thought he was a real ass.
Well, it's an effective shtick. I mean, after being insulted by Delbert for a couple of hours, most critics write a good review. Today, the premium is on sadism. All the seats of masochism are taken.
Well, that's an interesting view of the state of contemporary criticism.
Well, it's got to hurt to have a meaning.
Of course.
Paul, you've got to separate the artist from the work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really feel that Delbert has absolutely nothing to offer as a person, but the work is extremely important. Mm-hmm. I see this one on the shortlist for the Shaheen Prize.
Well, you picked him last year.
Mm-hmm.
Next, then, on the new releases, we've got something a little different. It's Diane Fowler's Guide to Home Surgery, and it's published by...
the Kitty Bitty Women's Health Collective. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the fourth in a series of books on alternative medicine by that group.
I know that you're big on this stuff, Kathleen. You're always taking some kind of pollen or plant extract, but for my money, you know, it's into the hospital and out of the penicillin at the very first sign of a flare-up.
Well, nobody is forcing it on anyone, Paul. I mean, this is definitely offered as an alternative.
But don't you think, well, surgery is best undertaken in a hospital by some guy in a white mask?
Well, naturally. I mean, there are limits on what procedures are appropriate in the home surgery environment. I mean, I don't think there's anybody suggesting that just anybody can attempt an organ transplant.
But, I mean, look right here. Appendectomies.
Mm-hmm.
And here. Minor cosmetic surgery.
Minor.
This shows someone going at their own nose with a... Well, anyway, we're 5,000 years of scientific progress a waste of time, Kathleen. What's the point of modern medicine if people are praying to trees? What does it all mean?
Paul, where's all this hostility coming from?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it's a deep-seated fear of pseudo-anything. Maybe we should just move on to the top 5 bestsellers.
Okay, well, Anglo's Bayshore Closet Case comes in at number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Guide to Home Surgery at number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Just beat out your own work there, Paul. The Rocky Road to Recovery, the Paul Moth story.
Ouch.
Hey, I understand that the Paul Moth story is going to be dramatized.
Yes, you're right. Starting Monday evening at 8, right here on the BCN, after show trial.
Great, great. Number 4, Rum and Reason, The Flavor of the Newfoundland Mind Through Time by Jane Gatherall.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it does. It's a breakthrough study of the role of alcohol on the intellectual history of the island.
And number 5?
Number 5, now that's a tie between Rex Murphy's new I, Rex,
mm-hmm.
and an intriguing new coffee table book called Supply Side, The 80s in Pictures.
Well, that'll be instructive. I missed most of the 80s.
Well, we'll be taking a closer look at them then on a future Word Works devoted entirely to coffee table books.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. Kathleen Hanrahan in with Word Works, and she'll be back again next week. And now, an exclusive pre-release from Newfoundland's premier reggae band, Pressure Drop. Their international tour continues tonight in Hudson, Quebec, and they'll be in Toronto next week, riding high.
Riding high. Riding high, oh Lord, riding high, don't you know we're riding high, oh Lord. In this world, too much competition, and everyone got to take a position. But do you know where to go?
think perhaps these photos might jog your memory, Mr. Minister, or should I say, Ms. Minister.
Show trial, where injustices are righted.
But I didn't perceive it to be a kind of interest at the time.
It's futile, Senator. The door to show trial is locked from the outside.
Show trial. Justice in action.
So the funds ended up in the Cayman Islands.
This week, Education Minister Orlan Boudreau answers questions about his university days in Albania. Show trial on the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland with your host, Ariel Flint. Tuesday nights at 7. I'm happy to announce that we've received our very first letter from Canada this week. Linda Leach of Western Ontario writes, "Dear Paul, I heard your show on Saturday, and the kids and I really liked it. I've never been able to get out there to Newfoundland, though I would like to. I knew a really funny guy from there when I worked in Fort McMurray a few years ago. Just one thing, though. What does the Great Eastern mean? Does it have something to do with Newfoundland, or is it just to make the show sound important? Looking forward to next week. Yours truly, Linda Leach." Well, Linda, the show takes its name from a ship called the Great Eastern that was responsible for laying the first ever transatlantic communications cable. But actually, the show was already called the Great Eastern when I took it over. And to be honest, after reading your letter, I thought I'd like to know a bit more about it, too. And we have an expert on the line right now, Dr. Peter Sains, senior lecturer at Newcastle University and author of Can You Hear Me? The Evolution of Cable and Wireless. Professor Sains, can you hear me?
Yes, Paul, how are you?
I'm just fine. So, I assume that you know all about the Great Eastern.
Not a lot about the ship, very little about the show.
Am I right that it was the biggest ship of its day?
Yes, enormous, actually. Beat out its nearest rivals by a few nautical miles. It was the brainchild of an engineer, a sort of wonderful lunatic called, are you ready for this, Isambard Kingdom Brunel. Years ahead of his time, wanted to build the biggest ship ever. Its size wasn't surpassed until the great liners of this century, the Lusitania, and so on.
What else can you tell us about the Great Eastern?
Well, it's quite a story.
I'll bet.
Not a very happy one, I'm afraid.
No, how's that?
Well, the ship was designed to take troops and immigrants out to India and Australia. It was a steamer with two paddle wheels and a double hull. Room for 4,000 passengers, carried enough coal for a 22,000-mile run, and had cattle pens, if you can believe it, to provide fresh meat all the way. Must have been quite something, almost 700 feet long.
Impressive.
Exploded, of course, on a maiden voyage in 1859.
Exploded?
Yes, boiler room blew up, 6 men dead, 9 horribly disfigured, and then while she was being repaired, the captain drowned on his way to shore, freak squall. And then Brunel died of a heart attack right after.
That's terrible.
The second voyage in 1861, she steamed right into the worst Atlantic hurricane of the last century. Can you imagine?
Oh, God.
Rudder and wheels torn right off at the mercy of the storm for 3 days and made it back to Ireland somehow.
Well, a bit of good luck there as well.
Yes, and the next year she finally made it across on the American run with 1,500 passengers. Things were looking up for the owners. Tremendous expense to build her, of course.
Well, it must have been.
But unfortunately, she rammed right into an uncharted reef in Long Island Sound.
Oh, dear.
Yes, they actually named that reef after the ship, the Great Eastern Rock, still on the charts today.
Really? So when did the cable stuff happen?
Well, after the second bankruptcy, you see, the new owners realized that the Great Eastern was the only ship that could carry all 3,000 miles of cable necessary for the job. So they laid the first one from Ireland to Heart's Content in Newfoundland in 1865.
Ah, the historic moment.
Yes, but it didn't work.
The cable didn't work.
No, completely dead. So the Great Eastern laid a second one in 1866, and you know what that meant.
Can you hear me?
Father, so there you have it.
What a story, what a story. What happened to the Great Eastern after that?
Well, the company was bankrupt again, and the ship was sold to the famous Lewis's of Liverpool department store and served as some sort of floating carnival. And finally stolen for scrap in 1887. It took them 2 years to take it apart.
Fascinating. Well, thank you, Doctor.
Hang on a bit. When they did take her apart, guess what they found between the two hulls?
I'm afraid to ask.
The skeletons of two men, father and son, workmen who vanished without a trace while the ship was being built, got sealed up. Sailors being what they are, of course, they attributed the ill-fated journeys of the ship to these two corpses in her belly.
How incredibly morbid.
The curse of the Great Eastern, eh?
Well, we certainly got more than we bargained for. A pleasure talking to you today, Professor Sains.
Good luck with the show. Sounds like you might need it.
Thanks very
Paul,
much. Yes?
Tell you what, if I ever see any fittings or what have you from the Great Eastern come up for sale. You know, the sort of thing you see once in a while at auction. I'll pick it up and send it along to you.
I'd appreciate it. That would be great. Professor Peter Sains, historian of transportation at Newcastle University. Well, I guess that answers your question, Linda, and answers a lot of my questions, too.
The Great Eastern, great radio, coast to coast in Newfoundland, on the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, BCN, 520 on the long wave.
Good morning, I'm Florence Robbins. Now the BCN Bulletin Board. Our BCN lecture series, Botanical Marvels of Newfoundland, continues every Tuesday. This week, Commodore Davis Andrews speaks on the pitcher plant, Newfoundland emblem and carnivorous anomaly, bogland beauty and beast. Lovers of literature won't want to miss Marilyn Wyatt signing copies of A Woman's Guide to Self-Fulfillment at Bookness on Water Street, Wednesday evening from 7 to closing. All hands are welcome. In this week's BCN Radio Bingo, Under the O, 68. And a set of dentures were left at the BCN studios during last week's open house. The owner may recover same by dropping by the BCN during business hours and providing proof of ownership. A big thank you to all BCN listeners who contributed to last week's bottle drive. We are now $347 closer to erecting our new broadcast tower. My name is Florence Robbins. Be sure to join me at 5 o'clock for the BCN 5 o'clock news. You are listening to the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, all Newfoundland radio.
Once again, it's time for our award-winning panel on political culture in Newfoundland. I'm pleased to see before me in the studio noted pundit and politico J. Richard Kandow, and we're joined by Ariel Flint, BCN's very own award-winning journalist and host of Show Trial. Joining us on the line from North Sydney is Valmanis Professor in Political Economy at the University of Newfoundland at St. John's, Carl Johnson. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Paul.
The first order of the day, did Premier Clyde Wells backpedal, renege on his commitment, putting it bluntly, did the Premier of Newfoundland lie to the people of this island about the privatization of Newfoundland Hydro?
Yes.
Okay. We're moving on to the next.
No, why wouldn't he lie? I mean, he is the Premier, so no one knows better than he that a good dose of deceit is required to govern. I mean, the bureaucrats can be counted on for the petty evasions and the fibs, but it's the politicians, and especially those in the cabinet, who are responsible for the big lie. And the system works, don't deny it.
Oh, it's stunned. It stinks, and it's stuck. Instead of privatizing, I'd like to see Mr. Wells publicize the details on the secret income supplement he received while the Liberals were in opposition.
Old news.
If he cleared the air and said whose pocket he was in, then we'll all be able to judge for ourselves whether or not the privatization of Hydro is a payoff.
And where will it end, Ariel? Is every slush fund to come under scrutiny? Mm-hmm. Are we going to want to check out the Hibernia kickbacks, retraining dummy funds, roads for rails interest skimming?
Road for rails interest skimming, Richard?
If it existed, hypothetically speaking, the point is this. Will government be allowed to operate unencumbered by democratic institutions, or does it constantly have to spend its time answering to the people?
Well, in classical Greek politics.
In classical Greek politics, Richard would have been given a dose of hemlock. Look, government's there to serve the people, not to use sophistry to justify decisions that harm workers, harm families, the poor, and the environment.
Utopian dream world. The wall came down, Ariel, and what did we see on the other side? Poverty, environmental disaster, and social chaos. Face it. Business gets things done better, safer, and more profitably. And if a few people get run over along the way, well, I'm sorry I have to say this, but the rest of us are better off for it.
Well, I think the argument's gotten a bit off course.
Yes, precisely. Next issue.
Just a moment now, Richard. Carl?
Yes?
You said the argument had gotten off course?
Yes.
Okay. The city of St. John's intends to build an arena/convention center in a hollowed-out section of the hills on the south side of the harbor. Now, this, despite a report that they commissioned that says the center would definitely, without a doubt, lose millions of dollars each year.
You know, the idea of a convention center rink is totally ridiculous. It's such a huge waste of taxpayers' money, not to mention another monument to ritualize male violence.
It's got nothing to do with that at all. This is fine. finally a chance for St. John's to erect a piece of world-class engineering using all Newfoundland talent. I suppose engineering is ritualized male violence, is it?
Burrowing a hole up the south side and pumping it full of hockey rink? Figure it out for yourself, Richard.
I don't believe this kind of talk, Paul. I really don't.
The city is going to sink $200 million
small
into
change.
A proven money loser. Yet they claim they don't have $30 million for a sewage treatment facility. Every day, tons of untreated sewage are dumped directly into our harbor.
That's just what's coming from City Hall.
Oh, yeah, sure. Make light of it, Richard. But if council is trying to build St. John's as a tourist mecca for 1997, they should realize that the sewage problem is a black mark on this city's image. It's shocking, Paul. You know, it's shilly-shallying. It's shouting for a solution.
Mm-hmm. Those figures you're quoting,
the St. John's Harbor is a natural toilet. The tides flush it twice a day. It's simply the capacity of the system is being tested by these thousands of brown baggers slipping into the city tax-free every day. Secure the perimeter of the oldest city in North America? I'm talking toll gates. Pay for pissing here or piss off. Baywaps out. Baywaps out. Baywaps out.
That's a brilliant idea, Richard. You know, you could set up your own flush fund. Problem solved. We'll even honor it by naming the facility after you. The J. Richard Kandel Sewage Treatment Facility.
And I would wear it proudly.
But what about the luminous eels that are living in the harbor?
It's time to clue up on our political panel for today.
You a brown bagger, Ariel?
No.
Solar house somewhere up Logie Bay
Richard.
Road? Do you pay city taxes? That's a real question to be asked.
This is a serious problem.
I want to thank our panelists for all the fun today. Syndicated columnist and BCN host Ariel
Flint. Brown bagger.
Political analyst J. Richard Kandel. And political scientist Carl Johnson, who joined us today from Nova Scotia. We'll see you all again next week.
Bye, Paul.
Luminous eels, Paul.
Rollins Cross, what can you say? They're successful and they have a cult following. Rollins Cross wind up their grand national tour this weekend. Why not catch them tonight at the University of Prince Edward Island? Here they are with It'll Have to Wait.
Late night news, laughing off an easy, but sometimes you got to choose.
time for our weekly dip into the mailbag on What's That Noise from Newfoundland, where you, the listeners, get the opportunity to win some fabulous prizes from our BCN boutique. All you have to do is correctly identify this noise from Newfoundland. Take it away, Tommy. That's it. 15 seconds of Newfoundland noise. I'll reach down into the mail sack now, and I'll pull out a postcard, and a very scenic postcard it is, with a postmark from Gaskears on the southern tip of the Avalon Peninsula. Hello to all our loyal listeners in Gaskears. And it's from Ilse Lasgum. I can't make out the signature. It looks like Lasgovaran. My apologies for any mispronunciations there, Ilse. And the postcard says, "Dear Paul Moth, I am one visitor at Newfoundland and do not understand the noise from Newfoundland. It is a motor crash. I enjoy program. It tells me many on Newfoundland and Newfoundland people, although I do not make it all together." And it's signed, Ilse Lasgevoren, or Lasfavoris. Thanks for writing, Ilse, and thanks for listening. But I'm sorry, you've guessed wrong. It isn't a car crash. That's the fourth straight week that the sound has gone unrecognized. If you think you know what that noise from Newfoundland is, write us at the Great Eastern, 342 Duckworth Street, St. John's, Newfoundland, and our postal code is A1C1H5. And here's that Newfoundland noise again. Think you know what it is? Drop us a line.
Hello, I am Morris Gesso. I hope you will join me this week on Interred. Avoiding a sticky situation, asking a loved one about implants before a regrettable crematorium incident. A sad update to last week's missing and presumed feature. Also, local humorist Jack Lush has an amusing look at the opened or closed casket debate. That's Interred, Sundays, noon, on BCN, with me, Morris Gesso.
You're listening to The Great Eastern on the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, with your host, Paul Moth.
I'm pleased to welcome back to the show our special commentarist on the state of technology in Newfoundland, Blaine Hart. Blaine is editor of Healthy Bytes, an independent computer zine, I think that's the term, published here in St. John's. It's also available on Internet and BitNet if you've got access. It's not available on Fishnet yet, is it, Blaine?
No, Paul, it's still not available on Fishnet, no.
So, I hear the provincial government has privatized the internet in Newfoundland.
Yes, there are virtual toll booths erected on every section of the electronic highway now between here and Makovic.
Roads for rails gone mad.
It's a frightening precedent.
Just what will shut-ins like yourself ever do for fun now, Blaine? Is this latest privatization fiasco our topic today?
No, more of an Orwellian nightmare today, Paul.
Oh, good.
What you're looking at, an ordinary enough computer, is one of the new provincial government's home workfare stations.
Home workfare? You're kidding.
No, a lot of people aren't really aware of the nature of the pilot project that's been going on here in some small communities, so I thought today we could have a first-hand look at the system.
Great. Let's fire it up.
Right. Now, starting in September, all welfare recipients will have one of these installed in their homes, hooked up as we are right now to the government Omnivax.
Ah, little message. Hello, welcome to Clyde. Today's thought, work sets you free. Oh, that's nice. Please enter your social insurance number now. 666. Clyde?
Computer-loaded interactive dependency. It's one of these computer acronym things.
Wow. From welfare lines to welfare online. Well, what's the point, though?
Less bureaucracy, if you believe the government. It's a direct payment system, so you'll get X number of computer dollars a month. And along with your barcoded card, you'll have to make purchases that way.
You know, what worries me here, Blaine, is the possibility that all my purchases will be monitored. You know, Big Brother, barcode symbols, Mark of the Beast, water fluoridation. I'm sure you're familiar with the literature.
Right. Well, not only will your purchases be monitored, Paul, they'll also be restricted in certain cases.
What kind of electronic feudalism?
Yeah, a lot of welfare activists are not happy about it, that's for sure.
Well, we might as well give it a fair shake before passing judgment. Give me a rundown on some of my other options here, Blaine.
Okay.
And for our listeners' benefit, I'm looking at a menu of choices. And I should say that the graphics and the animated figures are are amazing.
Well, okay, there are pay-per-play educational video games, like the Welfare Trap.
Uh-huh.
Atlantic City is an online casino. You have 649 and the other major lottos.
Well, what about this Workfare option?
Right, that's one of the mandatory options. The government was insistent that people be able to plug into work through the system, so users must spend a certain number of pre-designated hours a week working on the computer.
Doing what?
A variety of things, retraining and data entry mostly, taking over certain functions of the government secretarial services, you know, in a continuing effort to drive the unions out of the Western world and so on.
Well, I've got a choice of government departments now in which I can work. So let's see, transport?
No.
Fisheries? No. Ah, tourism and culture.
Okay, yeah.
Here we are, my new Workfare job. How much would I get paid for processing these Arts Council grants?
I don't know exactly. How much is minimum wage?
Ask my agent. Oops, looks like I just lost Ned Brocklehurst's application. That was a silly idea anyway. Well, let's try one of the games, okay? How about, the Welfare Trap? That looks like fun.
Right, now, Paul, the government claims that the installations will promote computer literacy amongst those who most need it, but as you can see, it's mostly icon-driven. And,
well, thank God for that, Blake. Hey, what happened?
Ooh, you've had your welfare cut off.
Oh, look, these little men on the screen, they seem to be going through my personal effects. You won't find anything. I know my rights. Hey, where am I now?
Boarding house, I think.
Oh.
Get a look at your roommate.
I've come down in the world. Look at the pecs on that monster.
Yeah.
Christ, he's drinking shoe polish.
And getting angry.
Hey, those are my bank records.
I didn't know you were married.
Before we go, Blaine, these installations must be expensive, so who's footing the bill?
Okay, well, some of the money is coming from the Axworthy Fund for Social Program Reform Pilot Projects. Mm-hmm. Some is being provided by the Home Shopping Network, and the rest will just be deducted from the user's welfare.
The future now. Is there any way to avoid it?
No, but I'm sure some progressive hackers will craft a subversive device or virus before too long. I mean, you can count on them for that.
Well, Blaine, thanks for coming in, and I look forward to having virtual sex with you next week.
Me too, Paul. I'll see you then.
And don't forget the virus check. Folks, Blaine Hart is the editor and publisher of Healthy Bites, available on the Internet at alt.bytes.this.
Crow Jenny, baby, where you been so long? I ain't had no good loving, baby, since you been gone. When I love my Crow Jenny, tell the whole damn world I do. But I just can't stand that low down way she do. You know I love you, Crow Jenny, better than I love myself. I wouldn't mistreat you for nobody else. Come on, man.
Crow Jane by the Cookstown Jukes, recorded live, featuring Roger House on vocals with Dennis Parker and Peter Narvaez.
A shocking tale of one man's descent into hell.
They took me off the film. I don't know, whatever an agent does, I suppose. Well, isn't that a conflict of interest? How can you represent both of us? You're letting me go, but it was my concept. Oh, hello, Dino!
The Paul Moth Story.
Mas Miska. Hey, muchacho. Miserable lion scum.
Hitting bottom in the city of angels.
1654 Ventura, 1654 Ventura. These mobs, Paul Moth. We're taking fire, we need some backup out here. Call a practical, get practical down here.
Who are you? What are you doing in my hand?
We're losing them.
Intimate.
Clear. Clear.
The Paul Moth Story. Thursday night at 9. Some material not suitable for young listeners.
What an honor to have an actor of Philip Dean's stature playing me, and on a prestigious dramatic series like Playlets. It's time now for my weekly editorial. The government is about to clamp down on the sale of turkey teas, or cold plates as they're sometimes known. Reports are that they may be highly toxic. Now look, I don't mind admitting that I'm in recovery. I'm on the psychic mend, as it were. It's all part of the process. And I've given up a lot in my life. Cigarettes, the booze, coke, Percodan, Ludes, Fresno speedballs, flaming brainbusters, IV adrenaline, crushed salamander glands, blacks, whites, reds, window panes, and anything you can put on blotter paper. I can't look at a sugar cube without having a flashback. Those fat, oily rolls of black hash that fill the room with an aroma reminiscent of Casbah's and Bazaar. All that is, it's behind me now. Yep, I'm high on life these days. But being in recovery is not easy. I need my little extravagances. And that's where the turkey teas come in. Turkey teas are summer here in Newfoundland. Every parish garden party, every community variety show, every primary school sports event closes with the customary turkey tea. It's served in the school basement or at plank tables in the town hall. And when I was growing up in the east end of St. John's, my family looked forward to the turkey teas after a long, hot St. Finian sports day. A slab of white breast, maybe some dark, some dressing, slice or two of boiled ham or some roast beef, two ice cream cone balls of potato salad, one purple and one gray-white, some macaroni salad, perhaps. We children adored tea teas. Dad drooled for a taste. Mom thanked God for them, all served up on paper plates with plastic knives and forks, so she didn't have to cook or wash up either. But now, the government wants to change all that. I agree. Yes, let's be wise and let's be cautious. Don't leave your turkey teas in the back window of the car for too long. You pull off that plastic, and if the mayo is gone, you know it. If the potatoes look a little green, don't eat them. And if the ham is slippery, avoid that, too. A little common sense in this, as in all things, is required. One day at a time. But let's not lose a valuable strand from our cultural fiber. Our being. Let's not throw out the turkey with the ptomaine. Don't make me give up my last innocent pleasure. Please. Well, that's it for another week on the Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine. Please keep in touch with your comments, your questions, and your answers. We're at the Great Eastern, 342 Duckworth Street, St. John's, Newfoundland, A1C1H5. Or phone us at area code 709-576-5240. Sorry, there's no fax yet. Next week. Technology, tubes, wires, and knobs were by Tom Codner. Director of Radio for the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland is Ish Lundrigan. My name is Paul Moth. See you next week on The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's Cultural Magazine.